Yo, what the fuck is popping, my beautiful people? Welcome back to another episode of the Modern Mastery Podcast, where we help you build yourself, build your business, and join the new 1% of individuals that are living a meaningful, free, and fulfilled life through self-development and online entrepreneurship. I just got off of a call with the man, Dan Go, aka Fit Founder on all socials. And man, did we have a discussion. And for those that don't know, we've had a running joke on Twitter called Only Dan's, because Dan Go, Dan Co, Only Dan's, I don't know, it just made sense at the time. So this conversation was like a clash. We got in there and man, did we had a fucking amazing discussion. We talked about everything from finding your purpose, confidence, positivity, psychedelics, integration, bending consciousness, open-mindedness, and everything in between, self-awareness as well. It was just a great conversation, and it was very cool to talk to Dan Go on a personal level, get to know the guy, and build that deeper connection. And I know you guys are going to love this episode. But before we get into it, let's talk about Modern Mastery HQ. MMHQ is a tight-knit community of creators, coaches, freelancers, and any other ambitious individuals that want to grow themselves and their businesses. You get to steal the proven systems, strategies, and processes from myself, a marketing consultant, and Joey, a performance consultant, to build a predictable and sustainable income source as an online entrepreneur through both tangible and intangible skill acquisition. This success is a result of becoming a high-value individual. This is what we help you achieve. The information inside is responsible for making members tens of thousands of dollars and drastically improving their quality of life. From monthly trainings, weekly action articles, 30-day habit challenges, monthly live calls, real-time help, and much more, it is the all-in-one solution for growing yourself and your business. As an entrepreneur, your business growth relies heavily on your personal growth. In Modern Mastery HQ, we nearly force both of those. If you absorb the information and do what we say, it's near impossible to fail. Our processes are time-tested, and we hold absolutely nothing back in terms of the information we provide. So if you want to join 450-plus members in accelerating their journey to a sovereign and free life, go to join.modernmastery.co and join for less than the price of a night out. With that said, I have a few favors to ask that cost $0. So if you enjoyed this podcast, subscribe or follow, depending on which platform you're listening on. It's just one button click away. It takes 1 second to do this. It costs nothing, and it truly helps support the growth of this podcast and get more organic listeners. The next thing, you can leave us a rating and review, letting us know what you thought, or just leaving a comment if this is on YouTube. Or you can tag us at Modern Mastery on Twitter or at Modern Mastery HQ on Instagram with a link to this episode and some kind words. And if you do all three, send us a DM and we have something special to give you. Without further ado, let's dive right into this episode of the Modern Mastery Podcast. Only Dance in the building.
We're here. All this pent up energy.
I know, it's been a long time, man. We've had a secret relationship on Twitter.
Yes, we have. We've had a love-in on Twitter for the past year. This is the first time we're actually getting on a phone call together, and it's alone. And it's a podcast alone.
Yeah, we had that alone. One way back. That was like a year and a half ago. That's crazy.
Oh my God. Oh man, what? That was a powerhouse crew too. That was like,
yeah.
It was like us. It was Oliver, Rogue, Papa Rogue, and all those guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good times.
Yeah, that was really fun. But since then, you've blown up, man. And I want to dive into that later in terms of your vision, because I know that's going to be interesting. But I asked this for, I've been looking forward to this. So like a few episodes ago, I started asking one question at the very start of the podcast. And feel free to take your time, mull over this if you have to. You may just have it right off the top of your head. But the first question, what is your life philosophy in one sentence?
One word, growth.
Oh,
it could be, or you could do the thesaurus version, evolution. I feel that the purpose of a human is now you got me all fucked up now. now I'm starting to really think about it. I'm like, I thought I had the answer, but now I don't know if I have the answer. But you know, my whole thing is like, as a purpose of the human being, is just to find out what your purpose is in the first place. So I guess there's two steps. Find out what your purpose is. Why were you put on this earth? And what are you meant to do? And grow as fucking much as humanly possible, you know?
Yeah.
In all aspects of things. I'm not mutually exclusive. I don't think that you should grow only in your career, and you should only grow in your health, or you should only grow with relationships. I feel like you should be growing with all of these things, all of these pillars, all at once.
Nice. That's funny, because you may have seen this, but I'm starting to plan out like writing a book, and it's called The Three Pillars. And it's without like giving too much away, because I'm still working on it, it's pretty much like mind, body, and experience, and like solidifying the things you learn and do in mind and body through experience. So it's like mind, body, spirit, business, level up, train everything. It seems to be a lot of people's philosophies, and I think that says a lot. But you said purpose. How does one find their purpose? Because I've talked on this a bit and talked about like busting through purposes, if you've read The Way of the Superior Man, and how you don't just have one purpose in life, but you have multiple. I want to hear your take on it. How does one find their purpose?
One finds their purpose by first being courageous and brave, because a lot of times their purpose is something that they feel like they should be doing, but either the golden handcuffs take place where they're making a bunch of money, you know, working corporate America or North America. That was what I was doing, you know, to get paid a good salary. So therefore it kind of takes them away from that. And it just takes courage and bravery. There is literally something inside of you that is telling you something that you have to listen to. And it's esoteric. It is almost like unexplainable why it happens, but it's just there. And the more that you push down that voice that tells you that, for me, in the beginning, it was telling me that you should actually get out of this corporate job and be a trainer, even though being a trainer wasn't necessarily the most popular thing back then, like 15, 16 years ago. And it's just listening to that voice, trusting it fully, and being courageous enough to not have plan Bs, to burn the ships, to not have safety nets, and to go fully forward with what you feel you are meant to do on this earth. So how do we find it? A lot of it comes from introspection. A lot of it comes from journaling, asking yourself questions. And a lot of it comes from a good dose of just like self-awareness. And it's just trusting yourself. And the other thing about purposes is that you say it's changing. We have multiple purposes. And that's true. I feel that there is a cyclical nature to life, where almost like every decade, it just seems like you are just meant to do something a little bit different than what you're doing. And I felt that with my first gym, when I opened up my first gym from like the age of like 29 to maybe like 39. It was all about the gym until I got really comfortable. And I was just like, and it was at the height of its fucking success. And I was just like, I'm too comfortable. I don't want to own this business anymore. And I'm making a lot of money. And that was almost like the version of my golden handcuffs. That was my second version of the golden handcuffs. So I had to look at what I was doing and look in my heart and be like, I don't want to fucking do this anymore. So what do I want to do? And then that's when I start journaling, asking myself really good questions. I don't feel like there's one purpose in life. I feel like every pillar in your life, let's bring it back to the three pillars. I feel like every single pillar in your life has a different purpose, and almost like a shelf life to a very large extent. You could say this with, obviously with me, it's like having kids. Every single fucking month is a different shelf life, seeing something different every single fucking month. So that's the kid version of things. Like with relationships, it's the growth that you take with your partner, or if you're single, it's actually just like, depending on whatever it is that you want to do at that point in time. You know, you could talk about my dating past. I had to date a lot to find the one that I feel was like the right one in my life. And obviously with career, you're going to have so much of these changes. You're going to have changes of philosophy, and they're going to lead you to wanting to do different things. And I would also say like the last one is going to be with your health and your body. You know, the goals I had in like when I was 30, you know, years old, or the goals I had when I was in my mid 20s are very different than the goals I have when I'm 40 right now. And you're just going after different things and you just have a different purpose. So, you know, people like look at purpose as the singular, as this almost like singular thing. And it's almost like the end all be all, when the reality is that it's very malleable and it changes over the course of time.
Powerful, dude. That was powerful. I got goosebumps during that. Because I know you live behind that. And like reading your tweets, it's different reading your tweets, because I know that you have lived through that, and I highly respect that. So that's awesome. And one thing I want to touch on there is that a lot of people seem to silence that inner voice for something else, or their gut, their heart, whatever's speaking at that time. And as you said, it's really a practice of self-awareness and intentionally trying to be more self-aware and understanding that gut feeling, that voice, your heart speaking and telling you what to do based on your past experiences. And that's, I would say that is the main lesson there, in at least pursuing a potential purpose, is listening to that gut feeling and following through with it and diving into the unknown and seeing where it takes you, and preferably having like the intrinsic drive behind that to do that.
Yeah. It's like, we have to separate the rewards and the outcomes from the purpose, right? So a lot of people are doing things just to make money, to make money for money's sake, right? And that's fine. I don't think there's anything wrong with that whatsoever, but not many people ask themselves why they want what they want, right? They don't. And a lot of times the reason why they want what they want is because they just want to impress other people. And it is very external based. They want to make $100,000 so they can say they made $100,000. They want to make $1 million because they say that they want to say that they are a millionaire or whatever it is. And it's all based on this external status that they're getting from it. And if only people are really honest about that, because it's not such a bad thing. You know, we're tribal people. We still have the psychology and the mind of someone that was like 20,000 years ago, you know, still based there. So it's okay to like want things and just want to show out, but you have to understand that sometimes your purpose, it has nothing to do with making more fucking money.
Right.
You know, it doesn't. And sometimes you're going to have to slog and grind and doing something that almost has like no potential profit value, just so you can actually do what you feel like you're meant to do. And eventually you're going to find out a way to make money, but you got to like kind of like remove that external validation and the external rewards from it to truly, you know, find what you're meant to do.
Right. And let's dive into like you opening up that gym. Was that your purpose at the time? And in terms of like the grind without potential profitability, what did that look like? If that relates to the gym.
So I look at things as, I take things slow, and I actually like to do things in steps, and to some people that would be like maddening. So, you know, I didn't want to like be a trainer for 2 years and then go off on like, well, Instagram wasn't alive back then, but it was like blogging and all that kind of stuff. Like I didn't want to start blogging and putting myself out there as this sort of like influencer without the requisite experience. So my whole thing when I opened my gym was, you know, we're getting in, well, at its peak, we were getting in like hundreds of people coming in daily. So that was like, so for me, that was like my experience, is actually dealing with people on a case by case basis and dealing with not even hundreds, like thousands of people over the course of like 10 years. And then I looked at that as like my way of getting paid and my way of getting experience in this particular field, right? And and that was just like what I felt like I had to do. And that was that actually has paid off a lot, because I can go on like I could go on Twitter and I don't feel like I'm being someone else. And I don't feel like I'm talking about another person's thoughts. Like these are literally things that I've had to fucking grind for over the past 10 years of owning a brick and mortar business. So like it's definitely contributed a lot to my experience. Could I have done it faster? I don't know, maybe, but yeah, I felt like that was like the next step in my trajectory. And then once I kind of like left, you know, or sold the business, you know, I kind of looked at it and I was just like, I don't know if there's like an inner confidence that comes along with it, with the amount of lives that you change or whatever it is. But I get on Twitter and I'm like, I can talk my shit and I can be confident about it, you know, because I have actually lived this fucking shit. Yeah, I've lived every aspect of it, the good, the bad, the ugly. So, yeah. Mm.
Yeah. I have so many questions. So you mentioned the confidence there, and I've been the way I think you'll appreciate this. The way that I create content is by writing out. It's kind of like content multiplication, but I really want to understand a topic before I actually start talking about it and relate it to my experiences. So I write out a long, kind of like a blog post, but I don't post it. I kind of just like let everything flow. And confidence has been the one that I've been doing recently. And I've made a few tweets about it, but what you said there about the confidence coming from helping other people, there comes a time where that confidence becomes like a perspective thing. You are like, you can help a lot of people, but you can still get trapped in your head and have like terribly low confidence just because your perspective is off and you're focusing on something external as opposed to internal. So is there any time during even like Twitter or just your life in general, but I would say even Twitter right now, where that messed with you, where the confidence got a bit screwed up because that perspective was off? Or have you cultivated it long enough to...
Yeah. Confidence is, I just feel confidence is actually just like knowing yourself and having a deeper understanding of who you are as a person and why you say what you say and why you do what you do. So if you are like completely congruent with everything that's going on from your mind to your actions to the results that are in your life, then that's what confidence is. You're in complete integrity. So nothing can fucking touch you, you know, like you feel like you're doing the best. Now, are there instances on Twitter where I've like, you know, maybe said something and I'm like, ah, fuck, I wish I just like took that one back. Fuck yes. Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, I think I told Jose on his, but it was just like Jose Rosado, mutual friend. Like, I think I told him, I was just like, there's this one time I just said something, you know, you're like on Twitter, there's no nuance. So like everything has to be like black and white and whatever. Not has to be, but it is. And then I wrote something, I was like, we would remove the need for free healthcare if everyone just got their bodies in shape and everyone. And then afterwards, I started to think about, like, you know what, Dan? You're kind of saying that one for shock value, aren't you? You know, you're kind of. Yeah. So I was okay with that. And at the same time, I was okay with like the blowback that I got from that as well, because it was saying something where I know intentionally, and then actually I'll say this, anytime you do something intentionally to get a certain response out of, you want to do something to get a response out of someone externally, it always blows up in your fucking face. You know, it always blows up in your face somehow when you're not doing things from like a internal locus of control, so to speak. So yeah, I mean, like at that point, I was just like, okay, well, you know, why am I saying this? Okay, I'm saying this because one, I do believe in that to a very large extent. Two, I'm saying this because I'm being extreme and I am being black and white and I'm being what I feel gets the most engagement on Twitter, right? And then I've went through that process. I introspected. And then afterwards, I'm like, it's okay. And that's okay. I'll learn from this. And I think that's the other part of being confident. It is how you speak to yourself when these things happen. So before, when these things used to happen, I just I'd be like, fuck Dan, like, why the fuck you gotta do that? Like, god damn it, you know? And you have this like real negative self-talk. But then I've learned over the course of 41 years that, you know, being easy on yourself and giving yourself grace and treating yourself like a best friend is really the best way to have a relationship with yourself. And I would say that, you know, confidence comes from a number of things. It's like comes from like your skills and what you can do and what you're confident in and what your experience is in. And it comes from knowing yourself. It comes from knowing why you do what you do and the various levers as to, like, you know, the reasons for that.
Right. Yeah, I'm on board with that fully. And I appreciate you being like open with this. That's the authenticity. I can sense it.
I guess so. Yeah. I guess so. I don't know. Yeah, it's like authenticity, man. Yeah, and here's the thing. I'll tell you right now, Dan. Like, we're all actors, man. Like, even like, take us away from this interview. And just in general, it's like we understand what the game of life is. And we're all actors in the game of life, and it's okay. You know, we have to actually like be nice to other people and act nice when you don't feel like it. This is like how you keep relationships. You know, this is how you, so we all understand that there are two parts of our lives, right? It's like, there's a part that we see all the time that we may not be privy to if we're not introspective enough, that we don't know. And then there's a part that we present to the world. And these two parts are not necessarily the same, and that's okay, because it's just a human thing. Yeah.
Okay. I've seen that. I've been munching on that idea for a long time too, because I personally got caught up in the trap of like, I started to see like social media influencers as bad because they would polish up too much, but then come to think of it and change that perspective, that's not the case, because they are being authentic when they can and when they should, because they're spreading a good message in a place of scale. They're producing that message and impacting people at scale.
Yeah. And when you're talking to people at scale, it's different than when you're talking to someone with like 100 followers on your account, you know. Oh. There is a level of responsibility. But also, it's just like that battle between, you know, like sometimes when we see people posting shit and they're putting like emojis all over and like all this kind of stuff, you know, if that's them, then cool. That's great. You know, and that's probably who they are as like a personality, you know, and we all just got our various personalities on social media. You know, I don't know what mine, I mean, like, fuck, it'd be hard to like think about what my personality is, you know, growth minded, ownership, health, all that kind of stuff, right? But we all have a various persona that we present on social media, which is, again, it's just the nature of the beast. You know, I think Ed Lattimore actually says, it's like, hey, we're all playing a game, and if you don't know that you're playing a game, then you're probably getting gamed right now. You know, so it's just the game that we're playing.
Nice.
And actually, I heard this from, I think it was Julian as well, this guy, Julian Shapiro. And social media is like their entry drug to us, right? So we post something on Twitter, that's an entry drug. Maybe they get on your newsletter afterwards, and then they get a little bit deeper with you. And then afterwards, maybe they get on a podcast with you, and then they go even deeper into your personality that way. So I feel like social media is just like this kind of like, I guess you could say, funnel for people to invite people to your thoughts. Yeah. And then afterwards, you know, they have the chance to see whether or not they want to go deeper with you to see if, like, you know, you're worth following.
Yeah. Because I mean, we both know what the top performing kinds of tweets are, and it's definitely not something you would post in a newsletter or even a long form podcast. Like, you're not just going to clearly post a long form podcast. So
drink more water.
You know, like, it had to be said. We're clipping that and we're putting that on Twitter only.
Just a 10-second podcast. Drink more water. Done.
I know that I don't understand. Like, I mean, there's some people that joke around with it, but there's some people that like hate it, or at least it seems like they hate it. And it's the quote that you said. It's like, we're playing a game, and if you don't understand the game, you're being gamed.
the thing is, they're playing a game too, right?
Yep. Yes, exactly.
They're playing a game too. Like, they're playing the fuck this guy with all these followers posting this like platitude shit or whatever. They're playing that game, right? Yep. So one way or another, you can choose the game that you play, you know, and you can play the game of the guy that criticizes other people, like, and how they tweet, or you can play the game of the guy who creates and just fucking creates a lot, you know?
Yeah. And the thing is, like, I don't know. I used to take it as like a jab because I post simple stuff too, but like, if I were to post drink water, it's usually going to be after a time that I'm dehydrated and drank water and saw benefits from it. So it's right. And that's more common than you think. Like, it's like, oh, I drink water all the time, so don't post about it. But at the same time, you may be.
It's like a reminder to yourself. You know, it's like a reminder. And it's okay. You know, I don't know. We're talking about the way that we tweet and stuff. And quite frankly, it's like, I have no problems with us tweeting the way that we tweet, spreading a positive message and a message of growth and a message of just like ownership and just being healthier. And we're not complicating things either. We're actually being very concise and being very like quick with it. So I don't see no problems with that. And I'm pretty sure you get a lot of DMs. I get a lot of DMs of just people just being like, you changed my life and this changed my life, whatever. Yeah, so I'm gonna run with that, you know, and just keep on going.
For sure, that's exactly it, man. And something it's fun when you do that, because when I DM'd you to get on this podcast, and it was like 2 days later when you were like, "Oh, hip, like my email is the best place to reach me," it's like I respect that, because I wouldn't want to. I don't know if you're on Twitter a lot, but. Man, just being off of social media, having things scheduled, like getting on to engage and having it very structured is a mental lifesaver.
So especially with the DM stuff, right? Man, we're getting hit up with like notifications left and right and whatever it is. You need some separation. So my separation is like, hit me up an email. That's where I kind of like have my guardrails and boundaries. Like not a lot of people have my email. So yeah, it's best to hit me up there, because I will not. I usually will get like fucking just overwhelmed, you know, when I see DMs and all that kind of stuff. So yeah.
Well, let's shift gears, because this is something I want. I'm very interested in this, and I would say you sparked my first journey into this. But psychedelics.
Yes.
You said. This is a tweet that you wrote. You said, "Drugs are for losers," said by someone who drinks 2+ coffees a day. When I'm on my second cup of coffee, but what? So I don't know if that was even pertaining to psychedelics, but I love that tweet, by the way. I'm pretty sure my first introduction to you was that thread that you did on
microdosing
psychedelics. Yeah, microdosing. So what's your experience with it? And I'll dive into mine.
Yeah. So I'll give you the context of my experience, which was like, out of four kids, I was like the black sheep of the family, whatever you want to call it, you know, four, very well-mannered Asian kids. And I was the one that wasn't necessarily like that. And I went out with my friends, and drugs were just, it started with raves, right? I started going to raves when I was like in my 20s, which was like 20 years ago. This was like when we had them in warehouses. And basically we had them from like 12 a.m. to like 6 a.m. We'd wear cargo pants, really like bright clothing. We have glow sticks. It was like the first raving days. So that was like my first foray into drug usage. So we used like Molly, MDMA, things like ecstasy. And then afterwards, I just really didn't have a perception towards drugs. I mean, sure, we had DARE, which was telling us, don't do drugs, they're going to fry your brain. And then I was just like, well, you know, as a kid, you experiment. So I experimented with that. And then afterwards, I got into like mushrooms. And I just did all this stuff recreationally when I was in high school or just out of high school into like college and whatnot. And then I just stopped doing it because number one is like, I was raving like way too much and probably getting like some sort of like serotonin blockage or whatever, because I was just doing too much E or whatever. And then I ended up just like stopping entirely. So long story short, like I've stopped doing drugs, and I've done this for the past like 10 years of my life, or maybe even longer than that. And then I read this article about how Silicon Valley people are starting to use psychedelics, things like LSD, things like mushrooms, and microdosing various things to get these like effects, to change your brain essentially. So I never looked at drugs as something that could be beneficial, right? I've always looked at drugs as like taboo and be like, oh shit, you're not supposed to do that. So I'm going to eat the forbidden fruit and try it out. I'm a badass, you know? And when I started to look at it as like a tool for not only introspection, but also just like enhancing my ability and my performance, at least mentally, with all the things that I started to do, I started to really like just research, get really deep into it. So I read, you know, I read the books, you know, Michael Pollan's How to Change Your Mind, Ayelet Weidelman's like How to Have a Good Day, the Psychedelics Guide, I think I forgot, Psychedelic Explorer's Guide. I read up all the things on this thing. I think it was called like thirdwave.co. And I tried to get myself as much information as possible before I started doing this. And lo and behold, my friend is actually one of my friends. He basically is like, hey, you want to come up to my cottage? A couple of our friends are coming over, mutual friends. And we're going to be, you know, dropping some acid and masterminding on business and stuff. And I was just like, dropping acid and masterminding business? I'm fucking in. So, so we end up going, and then I do acid for like the very first time in my life. And I will say that it was fucking incredible. It wasn't anything other than the fact of like, it's almost like you start to, obviously you're high. So you start to see things, you start to see fractals and like all this kind of stuff. I won't go through like the actual a journey of what it's like to be high, but after you're done with LSD and that, the day afterwards, it was so funny because I actually felt almost like a elimination of like anxiety and stress the day right afterwards. And the funny thing is that I feel that we all kind of carry this baseline level of anxiety and stress in our lives, and we think it's normal. And it's the way that we perceive things, it's our emotions around certain topics. And the more I got into learning about psychedelics, the more I understood that it's kind of like a little bit of a brain reset. And if anyone's like watching this, and if anyone's listening, this is not to promote you to go and try drugs or to do anything. It's like, you know, be completely responsible, do your own research. This is only my experience. All right. So there's a disclaimer. All right. But the next day after I took LSD, I was just like, it was almost like this absence of like anxiety and stress. And then I remember driving back home the day afterwards, and I had my my then girlfriend, who's now my wife, on speakerphone when I was driving back. And usually when I drive back home, I'm like, I just want to pop on like a podcast, and I don't want to speak to anybody, you know? But I was like, babe, let's talk. We had a conversation 2 hours all the way back until I got home. And then that was like my first foray into LSD. And then afterwards I started microdosing LSD. And I'm not going to say it was because of the fact that I was microdosing. I'm not going to say it's the fact that it was because I was starting to do drugs. But all these things in my life that I was almost like putting off, they came to the forefront, and then I started taking action on them. And I actually say that, you know, when I was in the process of like discovering psychedelics and just like journeying into them, a number of things happened to me that I took action on that I felt like I had to. Number one was like selling my business, right? Mm-hmm. Like that was a huge fucking decision, you know? And would I have made that decision without drugs? Maybe, you know, maybe not, but I mean, I made that decision, and that was like the first, that was actually, you know, the first time where I made, you know, 7 figures net in like a year or whatever like that. And so many things happened during that time. I got married, you know, like there was like all these, I remember recounting in my thread that there was all these little things that happened that they just happened. And they were a net positive for my life. So, you know, my whole kind of like relationship with drugs is actually twofold. So number one is that it's a tool, and you can use a tool to make your life better. But the con to it is that it can be a crutch. It could be a mental crutch. And this is what I see a lot of fucking people doing. And I could actually see myself kind of falling into it as well. It's just like they go from one trip to another. They go from one trip to another, and they go from one trip to another, and they don't do any integration. They don't kind of like harken back and kind of like journal out everything that happened during that particular time. And they basically just take themselves from one. It's like a person who goes from one relationship to another and doesn't realize that they're the fucking problem. And that's the problem with like, that's the problem with people jumping from one trip to another, not giving themselves any time to integrate, is just that you're doing this because you want to get high. And that's the only reason. You're not trying to bend consciousness. You're not trying to find yourself. You're just really addicted to getting high. So that's the biggest con to it. And I think a lot of times, like, especially with people who don't necessarily know a lot about psychedelics, that is like the biggest trap to fall into. A lot of people think it's like psychosis and like whatever. It is actually the mental addiction that they can get exposed to. And if you don't have anything to prop yourself up and have a foundation to kind of like go back to, then you're looking at drugs as that foundation, which is not necessarily the best thing. And the last part about drugs is the fact that I was talking about it as a tool. So I did something that was like, that I feel is like one of the most profound things I've done in my life, which is something called psychedelic therapy. So psychedelic therapy is basically taking, you know, a set amount of psychedelics, being there with a therapist, having like an eye fold, you know, above your eyes, and listening to really good music or really, you know, really magical healing music. And then you essentially don't even, you do all the therapy stuff up front. You talk to the therapist, you unpack everything. And then once you get into the actual session itself, you actually are the one almost like talking to yourself through the entire experience, and almost like doing therapy on yourself as a result of going through like a specific journey. So I did psychedelic therapy, and I thought I was going in with psychedelic therapy, man. Like I thought I was going in for like one thing, you know, it's like, hey man, like, how can I fucking crush this business? Yarr! And then it turns into, well, how's your relationship with your family? You know, you go in for one thing. It's actually really funny. It's like you go in for one thing, you come out with something completely different, something that you actually have to work on. And for me, a lot of it was like resentment, you know, resentment to like how I was raised, resentment towards like how I was treated as a kid, and a lot of resentment towards like my family members and stuff. And then going through that psychedelic therapy session, you basically come out with like this super profound platitude of a lesson. And to you, it sounds like the most profound thing. And you tell it to someone else, they're like, oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
But for you, you're just like, yeah, no, that's the answer. It. And for me, my biggest lesson was like, everyone's doing the best with what they got and what they've been taught. And you know, what can you do? You know, you can't change the way that you were raised, but you can change the way that you were perceived as to like how you were treated, you know, and forgiveness above all else, because, you know, keeping resentment in your brain is just like one of those things that's just like utterly corrosive. So I've had a very long, extensive history with drugs and psychedelics, and it's been super fun. And I'm still microdosing here and there. I'm still kind of doing, I guess you could say, macro trips, you know, every once in a while. But at the same time, you know, I just make sure that that I'm just being completely responsible with it and not doing it to escape something, but doing it to figure something out.
Yeah, that was really that was really interesting and helpful, because my experience, I feel like I'm living, like when you were talking earlier about what you were doing in your 20s, I feel like I'm in that phase of your life right now, because yeah. I used to, like, I would say when I was in college, like 3-4 years ago, I first got into raves and I went hard on the MDMA, and noticed the same thing. Like I was still very health conscious, so I cut it out pretty quick. It's been occasional since then, but last year in November, I did my first macro dose of psilocybin, like out in a cabin. I was there with friends. We were having Friendsgiving and just out in the woods. And it was the coolest thing because it wasn't that crazy of an effect. I'm sure LSD is more of an effect, but especially out in nature, man, that's the first time that I understood the concept of like being one with the universe, as woo-woo yeah. as you can make it sound. Like it just makes sense. Everything that happens when you're on that mini journey during the actual trip, everything makes sense. Like the yeah. common theme that someone kept bringing up is like, I would look at something, maybe like a bug, and they'd be like, it serves its purpose. And that would be like a mind blow to me, or my mind would be blown. I'd be like, that's the most insightful thing I've ever heard. Every time they would say it, and it just made sense. It was super cool. And yeah, it's something I want to dive into and explore more responsibly, but that's my experience with drugs.
What I think it does is it kind of like helps you numb your senses, right? So we're taking in all these like external kind of like, you know, attacks on our senses, whether it's like from food, environment, whatever it is. And what it does is it actually just like blunts you. Mm. And then you see things for what they are without the preconceived notions of like society. And yeah. for you to be able to say, you know, well, it does serve its purpose. Well, I mean, that's life, man, you know, and to someone that you say that to someone who's sober, like, what the fuck are you on, man? You know, yeah, serves a purpose to die. No, whatever. But you know, I was like, but to say it to someone that is actually like, you know, kind of like smoothed over, or that actually has their preconceptions like smoothed over and almost like not eliminated, but just like blunted for a second, it allows you to see these things. It allows you to have a greater appreciation of the things that are around you. Hmm.
Yeah, that's exactly what I experienced. But you mentioned integration. Would you mean shadow integration? Or is that like the term for it?
I don't know. Okay, so when I was doing psychedelic therapy, there was actually like this really just freaky experience where I wouldn't call it shadow therapy. It was more like inner child therapy. Mm. And one thing I realized is that we all have this like inner child that's inside of us that has actually tried to protect us this entire time. So maybe it's like from micro trauma when you're like a kid, or it could be anything, but you have this little, you know, child inside of you that has actually tried to protect you sometimes and not so cool ways, you know, whether it's like barking back at someone or whatever, but that's, you have someone inside of you that wants to protect you and protect your ego. And I realized like with psychedelic therapy, it's like an integration of that person and the fact that they don't need to protect us anymore. So, I mean, like not necessarily shadow therapy, I would consider it to be inner child therapy. And when it comes to kind of like, let's just say integration, I did something very specific. So I narrated the experience to myself, right? And after any kind of macro trip, and the, you know, macro trip would be like taking a bigger dose of anything. After any macro trip, I would actually go back and journal out the experience, the things that I learned, the things that are top of mind that I understood. And I would go back and I journal about it. And the cool thing about the psychedelic therapy thing is like, they give you a recording of you narrating your entire experience. So I got that recording back and I just like took notes everywhere.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff that comes out, you're just like, what the fuck? That's weird. But then like a lot of stuff that comes out, you're like, oh my God, like I would not be able to say that if I didn't have these chains broken in the first place. I wouldn't even know it was there, you know? So a lot of stuff is like stuffed down in our subconscious that we just need to get out. So I would say like integration is like super important. You got to journal out your experience. You got to journal out your lessons. You got to get really deep and introspective about why these things happened, why you thought a certain way. And that's how you integrate these lessons. So you know, if a person's jumping from like one trip to another, not doing the proper kind of like turn down time to really integrate all the things that they learn, then essentially I feel like they're driving themselves further into what I call like psychonaut territory, which is like they just want to do psychedelics for psychedelics' sake. And their whole, oh man, I remember I saw the CEO, a founder, he was actually an acquaintance of mine. And he was like this founder of like this, this 9-figure company, sold the company. And then now all he does every single day of his life is like rave or do something like do something. And then he's just like, he's wearing kind of like, I don't know how you say it, like sachets. I don't know how you call it, but basically he's turned into this guy who's just every single day of his life is to get high, to go to raves and party and to be like, you know, fully embracing of like whatever is masculinity or femininity. And that's the danger to it. You can get so fucking deep, you know, and you think this is a lifestyle when the reality is a hammer is not a lifestyle. A fucking screwdriver is not a lifestyle. These things are tools. You know, we use them as tools. We don't necessarily use them to live our lives with. Yeah.
Mm. That's interesting that a man that had accomplished that much, I'm not bagging on anyone's lifestyle, but to see them go that way, I would want to have a podcast interview with that guy and see what's going on.
You would be surprised at how many people are just incredibly uber successful. And I'm saying just like they have $1 million companies, multi-million dollar companies, like just out of your brain successful, who, when they sell their company, they have this identification taken away from them because who they were as a person is gone now. It's sold. So I've actually seen in my life, because I've surrounded myself with like entrepreneurs, really successful ones. And I've seen that a good number of times when someone sells their company and they're not fucking ready for it, they go into, I've actually seen someone try to commit suicide. I've seen someone go the psychonaut route. I've seen more grounded people kind of like just like not do anything and just kind of chill and figure out what the next step was. But a lot of entrepreneurs, us in general, us specifically as well, it's like sometimes we can base our identifications on these, on this external thing. Like I'm an entrepreneur, I'm a high achiever. And when that gets taken away from you, even though you sold the company and got this like crazy amount of success, that can fuck with you. So that's why people turn to drugs. That's why people, you know, possibly want to like end their lives. Sometimes it sounds so fucking weird, but it happens a lot more than we actually think. So
yeah.
Yeah,
I could imagine.
And think about it this way. Yeah, think about it this way. You're doing 12 hours a day of just pushing business, right? Especially for like super high achievers. Like all those 12-hour days, they're done. And then you're left with yourself, but you haven't done any work towards yourself. So what's going to happen?
Damn.
Yeah.
That's
There's actually someone I'm working with right now. I'm like, he's about to sell this company. And I'm telling him right now, I was like, dude, like get therapy now. Before the company gets sold and work through this shit now before the company gets sold. Cause he's actually telling me, he's like, I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do. What am I going to do with my life afterwards? And I just said like, well, we got to work on this stuff now before you get reactive and it happens. Yeah. And you're like, what the fuck do I do?
Yeah. Yeah. That's actually, it's funny that you mentioned that because I've experienced that on a smaller scale, I would say, because the driving, literally the message behind, a very simplified message behind Modern Mastery is that personal growth equals business growth. It's like me and Joey, yeah. I have the business stuff because I put out all my processes, but I also love the personal growth stuff. That's my jam. But then Joey's like the performance dude. So it's like neck and neck. But when you sold your business and tying back into like purpose, what was the next step? Was it straight into Twitter and wanting to impact people? What's the thought process behind that?
So the idea to sell my business actually came 2 years before it actually happened. And this is actually, long story short, like I met my wife and, I met my wife before, she was not my wife back then. And then a week after I met my wife, I was going to Bali. So I end up saying, hey, why don't you come with me? She ends up coming with me, and then, or she ends up meeting me there. And I was just like, oh, this can either go really good or really bad. Right. It was one of those things. Yeah.
Tell me about
it. And then I remember it was going really good. And I just told her, I was like, hey, and I don't know where this came from. I'm like, I want to sell my gym and I want to do this. And then she actually looked back at me. She's like, all right, let's do it.
Yeah.
That's when I knew that she was a real one. Right. Yep. So I had this idea like 2 years ago, and I knew what was going to happen. So I had about a 2 year time frame to really figure out what I wanted to do. Cause I'm 41 right now. I was 39 at the time, maybe 40. And I still have like a fucking lot to give. So I knew it wasn't going to be the end. I was going to get this like windfall of money, which is great. But I was looking at that money and I was just like, I ain't going to touch this money at all. I'm actually going to use it. I'm going to invest it. And I'm going to make sure I do something that I believe in that's going to, you know, give me that income. So during that 2 years, I basically was just trying to figure out what the next step was for me. And then it came to a point where I'm like, you know what? It's almost like a no-brainer, because all of my friends are entrepreneurs, and all of my friends, and I hate seeing my friends get out of shape. Like, I go to these masterminds. Anytime I see an entrepreneur with like a fat body, I'm like, what the fuck are you doing, man? You know, I'm just like, you have all the money, you're able to do all this stuff. Why are you still out of shape? You know? And they usually, I find that they have this mutually exclusive agreement where they have to trade in their health for their bodies. So I just looked at it and I was just like, this is a perfect fit. I love these guys. I love entrepreneurs. They're all my friends, and I hate seeing them being out of shape. So I am going to create a business for these guys, for themselves, to get their bodies into shape so they can feel what I feel. My core tenet, one of my core tenets is like, you transform your body, you can transform your life. So if you're starting from like a aspect where you're like 30 pounds overweight, you're carrying around this 30 pound weight vest, you lose that 30 pounds, you're not carrying around that shit. You're feeling lethe. You're feeling confident. You're feeling light. You got more energy. It changes your life, man. So my whole thing was just like, I know the next step of what I was going to do. And actually during the time I was like in the process of growing and selling that company, I was actually going and side hustling. So I would take in these entrepreneurs. I would actually buy into coaching programs. I would buy into multiple coaching programs to kind of like figure out, you know, how can I really set up this business to work? And during the time I was selling my business, I was going out and I was basically treating this thing as a side hustle. And then when the chains got released and I sold the company, I was like, oh fuck, I can do this like full on, you know, 100%. And when, you know, you go into something full on, it's like when you, it's like, I don't know if you've ever been this, but like you have a job and you have this side hustle and you're like, and you're at that point where the side hustle, you're like, all right, I'm ready to do this. And you drop the job. It is like, you put 100% into that side hustle and it's like, it fucking just, you know?
Yeah.
So I had that time to figure out what I wanted to do. I knew it wasn't the end. I knew I still wanted to be in fitness. I knew I still wanted to change lives like that. So it was more just like a switch, but I gave myself that 2 years of just trying to figure it out. Mm.
That's awesome, man. Funny because my roommate, I recently hired him to do like all my editing. So like videos, all of that stuff, because it's weird. I'm at that point and I went through that point with my 9-to-5 and like everything taking off, but I'm going through that point right now, but with like entrepreneurship and wanting to explode on all other channels. So like I'm paying someone for Instagram now. I'm paying him for editing and just like content multiplication. And he was able to quit his job because of that, because he got another client right after. And man, his energy right now is off the charts. And I know for a fact that he's just going to take it, run with it, and absolutely kill it. So it's a great thing to see, especially because he's my roommate. He's so close to me, best friend for like 5 years. It's awesome. But
he helped him start a business.
Yeah.
That's fucking exactly. Huge, man.
Yeah.
He helped him take control of his destiny.
Yeah. That dude, I'm so grateful that I can like help him out with that too. It feels amazing for me.
Yeah.
But it's funny because the night after, like we were sitting on the porch. We always sit on the porch at night and just like chill and talk. And he started spitting platitudes just like at me. Like he was feeling profound. And so he was spitting platitudes at me. And you could tell that he just like deeply resonated with all of them in that moment. So it was really cool to see. Maybe he'll be the next big Twitter platitude if slinger.
If he wants to be that. But no, I mean, you know, the funny thing is about these like platitude things is they're all cliches, but they're all true. Yep. You know, and when you're living it, that's when they become fucking true for you. You know, when you're going through the grind, you're in the arena and you're getting your fucking face like mashed up. You have good months, you have bad months, you have good days, bad days. Like, you know, that's where you get these fucking, that's where you get these short, pithy kind of like instances in your brain, just to, like, you know, share on Twitter. So anyways, I fucking love platitudes, man. You know,
how do I?
Let's go.
They get me pumped. And the cool thing about it is you can kind of tell, you can see someone's journey in the form of platitudes, like the energy they're putting out.
So you can say something, right? And someone else can say the exact same thing as you.
Yes.
And then I can look at you and I'd be like, I feel it. And I look at him as like, he faking the funk big time, right? Big fucking time. You can tell. I don't know how it is on Twitter, but you could just fucking tell for some reason.
Yeah. I don't, it could be like punk. It's like, it's just how they word it. It's the same. Well, it's how they word it. It's the punctuation. Like, for me, like when I'm creating something, I will leave out a period if the period does not fit. Like if I'm not trying to have some form of emphasis that a period provides, I will not include the period. It's weird.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, is when the person's creating it, they're putting that energy into the slight differences in the words. It's really cool.
It's so cool. And I do believe there's some esoteric, you can't feel it, you can't see it, but you can kind of sense it. Is like you can sense the energy coming out from someone's tweet. You can. And you could be like, this guy's an angry motherfucker right here. Or, you know, like I see some Twitter guys, I'm like, this guy's so angry. Yeah. And then I see some Twitter guys where they're just like, this guy's so fucking focused. He's on it. He's ready to do his thing. Everyone has like this different style to what they do. And much respect, you know, respect to all the styles that are out there. You know, much respect to Twitter too. Wouldn't be talking on this if it wasn't for Twitter right here. So, yeah, much respect.
I agree. But I want to, you mentioned journaling a few times. What is your journaling method? Like, do you do it consistently, like day-to-day basis, or what's your process for that?
It is so scattered. There is no routine behind it, but I do it on a regular basis, if that makes any sense.
It does.
And my journaling routine, it looks a little like, number one is like gratitude journaling. I mean, okay, so there's different types of journaling out there. Let's put this out there. So number one is like, there is journaling for your day, right? You're getting your day organized and really just organizing your day and having all your thoughts organized in one place, specifically for your business. That is a form of journaling right there. And then the other form of journaling is introspection. It is literally just, is actually just getting into the reasons why you do the reasons why you do it, why you feel the reasons why you feel, you know. And you can do this by writing, or you can do this by actually thinking about it. The best part is writing. And then you have brainstorm journaling. It could be mind mapping. It could be, today I did like a flow chart based on kind of like the flow chart based on our process of how we get, you know, our people in shape. And it could be a brainstorming session. You can have brainstorm sessions, especially when you need to come out with new ideas, when you need to work out a problem. And then you can have like certain things like journaling prompts. So journaling prompts can look like this. You can actually get a really good question and answer the question yourself. Or it depends on the context of the situation. Okay, so if you are met with this like critical life decision where it's almost like you either trust your intuition or you go with what's safe, right? And you have to fucking journal that. You have to put it out there. So I have this thing that's where it's like the worst case scenario. What is the worst case scenario of me going after what I want to go after? Will I survive? What is the worst that can happen? And what's the best that can happen? You know, I want to know everything. And just give me the lay of the land. And then there's actually a final one, which I think is like more big vision, which is like to start at the end journaling, which is to say, okay, so here's like a lot of people, they're like, I just want to make more money, whatever the fuck it is. Well, how much more fucking money do you want to make, right? Like, be specific. And then once you be specific and you start at the end, you're like, okay, I want to make, you know, a bajillion dollars, whatever it is. Then you work backwards from there. You make it realistic for yourself. And you see like how you have this big, hairy, audacious goal, which I call the, which is called the BHAG. You create the BHAG, then you work backwards and you see how real it can be for yourself. And then you start working on step one. So there's so many ways and or there's so many methods and so many contexts in which to like journal. A lot of times people can be like, you know, it could be like this like general, oh, just journal. And what the fuck does that even mean, bro? You know?
Yeah.
But for me, it's like context dependent. And it depends on, you know, it depends on what situation you want to be journaling at and what you want to be doing with it.
Mm. That's cool. I've been doing a lot of what Joey coined brain dumps. Actually, I don't know if he coined it that, but brain dumps.
Yeah.
And it's just super simple. It's literally just sit down, write one thing. That one thing will lead to the next, the next, the next, the next. Then you just get out all of your thoughts on paper. And then you can kind of, if you want, annotate it with either the irrationality behind it. Like, it's a great way to just get things out of your head onto paper, and then you instantly feel better. It's kind of magical.
If you keep it, and actually just let me text my client. I'm going to be like, tell him I'm going to be like a little bit like 5 minutes late or whatever. And and then the thing is, like, with all these little annotations that you make, and if you keep that in your brain, what's going to happen is it basically stays in your brain, and then it might drive you fucking crazy. And the thing is that when we put it down on paper, number one, it makes it real. You know, it turns like something like invisible into something that is like actually real. It's on paper. And a lot of times people are so scared to put those things down on paper because they're like, I don't even know if I'm going to accomplish it. I don't know if it's going to happen. But the thing is, when you put it on paper, it becomes a real thing. And if we know anything about thoughts, is that thoughts can become reality. So, yeah, man, this, you got to fucking put it down. You got to work it out and make it real for yourself. You know, make it real. Yeah.
True. I love that. But last question for you.
Yes.
And I've been asking everyone this too, and I feel like it brings like some human to this. What's the main thing you are struggling with right now, and what are you doing to change it?
Oh, fuck. What am I struggling with? I'm struggling with a lot of shit. Like, I'm struggling with a lot of things, but I don't necessarily look at it as like struggles. It's just like life. What am I struggling with? I'm struggling with the fact that, okay, so what is a, man, I wish I could give you like the most like fucking completely honest answer. Well, number one is that I'm in day 9 and 14-day quarantine, so I can't leave my house. So I have to look for ways in which to get a workout in and do so in a way that keeps me somewhat excited. So that could be like one of them. Let me think about this one just for like a really quick second.
You're good.
Man, it is actually the cognitive dissonance between this big this big hairy ass goal that I set for myself and how far away we are from it. That is the actual thing. I actually struggle a lot with patience. That's what I struggle with. I want everything to happen, and I want it to happen now. And if it's not happening, then fucking like people will know about it. And that is actually something that I react to and something that I've been just like working on this entire time. And I just, there is like this balance between like patience and going after what you want. And our company in general is actually, it's actually growing, and it's growing away from my involvement. So the things in which I was able to control before, whether it be like, you know, sales or fulfillment, I'm no longer necessarily being the one to do those things anymore. So now it's like a lack of control, and I have to deal with that because I can't control every aspect of my business anymore. And I have to trust other people to do that. And along with that comes patience. which is like, I literally look at my clients and our clients' results every single fucking day. So sometimes when I'm looking at it, I'm just like, this isn't moving fast enough. This guy isn't moving fast enough. What is my coach doing with this guy? And I have to fucking calm the fuck down and understand things are working. Things are okay, right? It's just me just really being impatient. So I feel like one of the things that I have to cultivate more inside of my life is this feeling of just like, just being patient with the process, not being outcome oriented. And just taking my own advice and just like loving the process and being patient with it, and things will happen. You know, everything I've ever wanted in my life, I've gotten, and it wasn't by fucking stressing over it and you know, checking the scoreboard every single time. You know, it was actually by just focusing on the process and just doing the work and letting the results come. You know, to a certain extent.
Nice, man. I struggle with that too, quite a bit. I was going to wrap up. If you have one more thing, feel free.
I think it's such a 2021 thing. That's what I think it is. You know,
I can
it's
see
like,
that,
well, yeah. 2021, 20th century, 21st century. And it's just like, I ordered Olympic rings yesterday. It came today. Right, from Amazon. If I want to say something, I'll put it out on Twitter right away. If I want this, I'll get Uber. It's like instantaneous in terms of what you can get in this world. And I think that does somewhat contribute to this impatience with our results and this all or nothing aspect. So to a certain extent, it is society driven because we are very instant gratification. Not only minded, but we're getting it. We're actually getting rewarded with instant gratification. So I think it has something a little bit to do with that. And I do think, like, to a large extent, a lot of like what we do in life is almost like we almost have to do the opposite of what society is actually wanting us to do and pushing us to do to become normal functioning human beings. So it is very much understanding that process and just being patient with it.
Nice. I love that, man. But dude, a full hearted appreciation towards you for coming on. That was amazing. Yeah. I have more questions. We next podcast, maybe in a few months from now, dubstep is the first topic. We're talking about dubstep. But
oh my God.
We'll leave a cliffhanger there. So where can people find you? And then feel free to shamelessly plug anything you've got for us.
Yeah, man. If you're obviously like the lowest hanging fruit, come follow me on Twitter. I'm at Fit Founder. And I actually have a podcast as well. It's called The High Performance Founder. I talk to entrepreneurs, and we specifically talk to entrepreneurs to help them get in shape with ease and minimal stress, and to do so and to cut the bullshit, to be honest. Like, so much fucking misinformation out there, especially on social media. I actually think the freedom of information actually made the access to information even harder than it was before. So, you know, we just try to keep it simple, and we try to just tell you the things that you wouldn't necessarily hear from someone peddling like a fucking celery juice diet or whatever it is to you. So yeah, like, you know, if you're an entrepreneur and you want to get in shape, go listen to that podcast.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Awesome. Anything else? Coaching, community products?
Yeah. So we have our High Performance Elite program, which is our 12-week coaching program. This is where we work specifically one-on-one with entrepreneurs to get them into their best shape. The second thing is we have a private community, which is the Academy, the High Performance Academy. And that's kind of like a place where, you know, people are able to join up, able to interact with me. And they're also getting put on the very same exact system and program that we put our entrepreneurs through. So join that if you want. And just in general, you know, like, just follow me on Twitter. You'll see exactly what the vibe is, and you'll choose whether or not you want to interact with me deeper, just like we talked about. Yeah, exactly.
Hit the funnel. Yeah. But thank you again, Dan. I appreciate it.
Thanks, brother.
You got things to get to next time.
Yeah.
We'll hit it off. Dubstep.
Absolutely. Right. Dubstep. We're going to start it off with dubstep. All right, Dan, I got to jump off. Have a good one, brother. Sure. Talk to you soon. All right. Take care.
My friends, thank you so much for listening to that episode of the Modern Mastery Podcast. I have a few favors to ask you. For a whopping $0, you can support this podcast by following, rating, and subscribing on whatever platform you are listening on. And for an additional $0, you can share this podcast on your social media accounts, tag me in it at TheDanCo, and I will share you on the community page. This truly helps the Modern Mastery community and podcast grow and allows me to bring you top-tier guests to fuel your hunger for wisdom. It costs $0, but it does cost you your time, and we understand how valuable that can be. But considering you spent an hour or so listening to this podcast, a one-minute subscribe or follow button click and social media share isn't too much to ask. And if you truly enjoyed it, we would hope that you do this out of the kindness of your heart. And we truly appreciate it. And the second favor, which costs money, is joining Modern Mastery HQ, the only platform you need to master your mind, body, and spirit while building a 5 to 10K a month online business as a creator, coach, freelancer, or entrepreneur. You can go to join.modernmastery.co to join 350 plus members and gain instant access to information that has the potential of making you hundreds of thousands of dollars over your lifetime as a business owner. With that, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Modern Mastery Podcast, and I hope to see you in the next one. Peace.